Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Here's a question for you. Are we going to be looking at environmentalism being the reason given why people should not have babies? In particular, I wrote an article published yesterday at albertmohler.com entitled, Is Cap and Trade for Babies Next? The reason for that is that a group of scientists, two in particular at Oregon State University, did a study in which they tried to measure the impact, carbon impact is what they're calling it, of a woman who decides to reproduce. And we're going to be talking about that a good deal more in just a few minutes, but it raises a larger question. After all, what they're saying is that an individual is responsible for his carbon legacy. And what they're suggesting very straightforwardly is that people can make all kinds of lifestyle adjustments, buying a new car that gets better mileage, cutting back on the use of energy, changing the way one deals with recycling and all the kinds of things that are on the list of how to be green. You can change all the light bulbs in your house and do all of this. But as this article seeks to document, you have one baby and you have vastly outweighed all of those environmental savings by adding tons of carbon dioxide to the future environment. As a matter of fact, they're talking here about each child adding 9,441 metric tons of carbon dioxide to the carbon legacy of an average female. So they're straightforwardly saying that if we're going to deal with the issue of global warming, climate change, if we're going to deal with the reality of the environmental challenge before us, we're going to have fewer babies. We're going to have to calculate the environmental cost of a baby. They'll tell you right now, pretty much, you can go to an economics classroom, and in almost every economics textbook, they'll come up with a model for how to project the cost of a child, raising a child from birth until, say, through the college years. And right now, depending on where you live, that's anywhere from $250,000 to $700,000 on the projections I've seen on the Internet. But now, the environmental impact is a big issue. That raises the question for our conversation today. And we could talk about many different things. We could talk about the whole global warming question we have on this program. I am not buying the very linkage that they're talking about here, just in terms of a human being, carbon legacy, they're calling it, climate change, and all the rest. We could debate that issue. That's not the point today. The point today is the baby question. What does it mean to come into a society and into a moment in a culture when people say we're going to reduce the question of human reproduction to economic impact? The bigger question for a lot of people is this. I hear people say, I'm not bringing a child into the world because this world is filled with so much trouble. There is an economic recession going on. This problem or that problem. Folks, we're fooling ourselves if we think that our current moment is somehow less conducive to welcoming babies into the world than any other. You want to go back to the Great Depression? You want to go back to times of plague? You want to go back to times of war? It is pure chronological narcissism to think that all of a sudden now we face a time when we shouldn't be bringing children into the universe. But let me tell you, the opposite of that is always true. The child is a gift from God. And asking the question is itself to betray something that I think should cause alarm in every Christian heart, to come back and say, are we really considering children as basically a cost, as those who bring an environmental impact? Is that the way we're supposed to look at children in the first place? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to get to that in just a few moments. First, a look at some other things in the news. USA Today is out with a very interesting story, and it's one of those that when you see the headline, you will note is not followed by quite the same content in the article. See if you see what I mean. The headline is this: parents, kids enjoy more in harmony than prior generations. Now you start looking at that, the headline insinuates that the current generation of adults and their teenage children is actually closer than in prior generations. That's what the headline would imply, and that is what the article also stipulates, but only in terms of a loss of conflict, a lack of conflict. It doesn't mean agreement. That's where I take odds with the headline. It doesn't mean in harmony. It just means not arguing. They suggest here that the generation gap that separated the baby boomers from their parents is really not what is now marking young people from their parents. This vast gulf between the basic values and norms for youth and the middle generation of parents and leaders is now not so much the issue. Neil Howe, who's a demographer, who's given a lot of attention to the issues of difference between generations, he's suggesting that there's much less generational conflict now. Listen to this. Only 10% of survey respondents with a child over 16 say they have had major disagreements with the child in his or her late teens or early 20s. But the reason why I find this very much less than convincing is because all the article in the end tells us is that they are not arguing. It does not say that they are agreeing. Only 10% say they've had a major disagreement. But the same respondents said this. 80% said that their moral values are very different than their parents. 80% of the young people said their moral values are distinctly different from their parents. 8 out of 10. They said the same thing about the work ethic. 69% said their tastes are very different in music. Well, that's not that big a deal. But when you talk about moral values, what this tells us is that there is a lack of conflict because there's evidently a lack of conversation. There's a lack of conflict because I think this generation of parents, by and large, is so averse to conflict that in many ways they really aren't even talking to their kids about this because they really don't want to risk conflict. From a Christian worldview perspective, there is some good news in this because it does tell us that there is not in this generation of young people a spirit of rebellion as did Marx in previous generations. That's good. But it is also a warning to us that part of the reason why there is less conflict is because there's obviously less substantial conversation, and there are an awful lot of parents who are simply deciding not to make issues out of things and not to force discussions over issues because they don't want to have the conflict. By the way, some of the people looking at this say that young people today have grown up in, quote, very flat horizontal relationships, end quote, which means, again, that an awful lot of young people see their parents basically as peers. And there are an awful lot of parents who want to be seen as friends rather than as parents. Christian biblical parenting requires directive teaching. It requires authoritative influence. It requires, well, the risk of being called paternalistic because, after all, you are parents. Another troubling story, this one also from USA Today. Interesting, USA Today is kind of a barometer of the popular culture, and every once in a while, it's just chock full of some things that lead you to scratch your head. Here's one, story out of Toronto. Another study has been done demonstrating that young people, teens and young adults, are much less clear about what gay is. I don't mean they're confused over the word gay, whether it means happy or homosexual. They're confused about what homosexual means. All right, here is the real issue. Rich Savin Williams of Cornell University is one making the argument. He says this, who's gay? That's not an easy question. There are many different ways of defining sexuality. What is embedded in this story is that young people are confused over the category because does this mean permanently? Does this mean all the time? Does this mean exclusively? What this particular professor is suggesting is that there is a period of experimentation. There's some flux. There's some seeking after sexual identity. That means that many people aren't sure whether they're gay or not, even though they may have both same-sex and opposite-sex romantic attractions and sex partners. Now, I'm far less concerned about whether kids actually know what gay is, because I have to tell you, regardless of this article and regardless of this study, I am fairly confident, knowing teenagers, that they know what gay is. I'm far more concerned with USA Today running this article because Rich Savin Williams is himself a proponent of the gay rights agenda. And that's what's really at stake here. Folks, when you read the paper, you need to look beneath the words and look beneath the headlines and look beneath the article to find out what's really going on here. And in this case, there is an agenda to normalize not only homosexuality, but all kinds of sexual experimentation and all kinds of arrangements of sexual and romantic relationships. It's one of these situations in which to confuse all the more is the goal. And we are living in a time in this postmodern age when some people would very straightforwardly want you to think that all of these categories are fuzzy, that there are no fixed categories, there are no fixed issues, there are no fixed definitions, there are no determinative meanings to sexuality, much less determinative understandings of what is right and wrong. The more you can confuse the issue, the more you can suggest that gender is a fluid concept, the more you can suggest that people are evolving in their sexuality and should go through. There are people that argue this very straightforwardly, that they have the moral obligation to go through a period of experimentation to find out who they are. There's an agenda here that goes far beyond the gay rights agenda. It's an agenda to normalize all sexual expression and to deregulate sex, marriage, and relationships entirely. If you can make the argument that teenagers are confused because the definition of gay is no longer stable, you can pretty much extrapolate that argument all the way through the culture, and don't for a moment fail to believe that's exactly what's at stake. We're going to come back to talk about the question, are we to measure babies by environmental impact? Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Two scientists at Oregon State University, Paul Murtaugh and Michael Schlacks, wrote a report entitled Reproduction and the Carbon Legacies of Individuals, published in the journal Global Environmental Change. It's the kind of thing that probably would escape much public attention, but for the fact that their argument is reducible to this. You can do all you want in terms of changing your lifestyle, lowering your energy use, recycling all your garbage and all the rest, but if a woman does all those quite normal things that we're being advised to do these days, and then she has two children, she has eventually added nearly 40 times the amount she has saved of carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. Indeed, she will add 9,441 metric tons of carbon dioxide to the carbon legacy of her lifetime. Now, let me just ask you this. Number one, can you imagine, from a Christian worldview perspective, deciding whether or not you're going to welcome a child into the world by measuring that child over against carbon legacy? You know, I would argue that it's wrong to measure that over against financial cost. In terms of saying, is there a cost-return benefit analysis that we can do on a child? That's a fundamentally non-biblical, unchristian way of thinking about this. But it follows the logic of the world. If the world is really buying into the idea that climate change is the great challenge and the way to address that is by reducing carbon dioxide emissions, then eventually you're going to have to get to the point that this article directs us, and that is to, there are going to be fewer people on the planet, and that means we're going to have to, say, have fewer babies. And I have a big problem with that. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I am appalled by so much of the language I'm hearing out there, even from some Christians who I think are just not thinking well, who say, I think we really need to limit the number of children we have. We really need to be very careful, as if the justification has to be for having a child rather than not having one. The phone number, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Pembroke Pines, Florida. Cal Beisner's on the line. Go ahead, Cal.
Hi, Dr. Mueller. I really enjoyed your blog piece on this article. And, you know, it commits all kinds of serious problems, fallacies in the science and so on. But just to point to two, first of all, it only counts the warming effect of carbon dioxide, and it greatly exaggerates that. It doesn't look at the fertilizing effect. For every doubling of CO2 in the atmosphere, you get an average 35% increase in plant growth efficiency. So, in other words, we feed more people and animals, and we green more of the earth. They do exactly the same thing about children. They only count children as emitters of CO2. They don't count them as lawyers, bankers, car manufacturers, farmers, musicians, pastors, anything else. Now, would they like themselves to be thought of the same way? Would they like to say, well, you know, I confess, my carbon emissions are going to do more harm than my work as a scientist and a professor and a husband and a father and a friend. I guess I shouldn't have been born. In fact, if I'm responsible, I'll commit suicide now. Is that the way they want to think about themselves? And if it isn't, why do they want other people to think about themselves and their children that way?
You know, Cal, they say not only do they think that this kind of calculation is important, they They make a statement in here, and I want listeners to know that Cal Beisner leads a group known as the Cornwall Alliance that has done an awful lot of work just looking at this whole question of environmentalism. And one of the things I say in my article, I didn't have time to take this on straightforwardly, is that Christians really need to become more informed about these issues before you jump to all kinds of assumptions, even about the most basic ideas embedded within this kind of study. That's just so complex. But Cal, I want to come back to you, and there's one statement in this article. They say that individuals must be responsible for the carbon legacy that that comes from their reproductive decisions. Can you imagine thinking that way?
No, I really can't. As you were saying just right after the break, it's not a biblical way of thinking at all. When Psalm 127 tells us children are a gift from the Lord, the fruit of the womb is his reward, it doesn't say the fruit of the womb is a curse. It doesn't say that the children are punishment. It says that they're like arrows in the hand of a mighty man. Blessed is the one who has his quiver full of them. You know, if I lived in an old, you know, in an ancient culture where warfare was done with bows and arrows, I wouldn't just want one or two arrows in my quiver. I'd want a whole bunch of them to shoot out at the enemy. Well, that's the way we should be in the kingdom of God. We Christians should want plenty of kids to train up and nurture and in the admonition of God to follow Christ, and then shoot them out there into the cultural battles and especially into the battle for the souls of men.
Absolutely.
The evangelists.
You know, one of the responsibilities of Christian people, of a biblical people, is defined in the Old Testament, is to produce godly progeny. And nowhere in the Bible is there any kind of blessing upon any form of thinking that would see children as a burden. And in fact, both especially the Old Testament and the New Testament, they were given to us in a time when many other peoples were sacrificing children on altars. When, for instance, in the Greco-Roman culture, babies were being abandoned when they simply were not wanted. And both the people of God of the covenant in the Old Testament, the Jewish people, and the people of the New Covenant, one of the signs of the fact that they were indeed following the one true and living God was the way they treated children and the way they looked to babies. And losing that is a sign that we're watching the breakdown of this Christian consensus that once shaped this culture but now is evaporating before our eyes. Cal, I want to ask you another question. When you look at the whole environmental issue, not just looking at babies but looking at human beings, how do you respond to the suggestion that the problem is that we have too many human beings on this planet?
Well, one, I would say that there is no empirical basis for that suggestion. There is no correlation, no statistical correlation between either population density or population growth rate and any of the problems that people usually associate with so-called overpopulation, like poverty or environmental degradation or anything of that sort. There is zero statistical correlation. The concept of overpopulation is simply undefinable. That's something that's been discussed by a lot of demographers. The second thing that I would point out is that these people are also very short-sighted, and they've lost track of where the science of demography is. Over the last 20 years, over the last 50 years, the fertility rate around the world has fallen so much that in the industrialized world, it's already well below replacement level in almost all countries except the United States. And in the rest of the world, it's been falling even faster, so that it's going to hit replacement level or below more rapidly than it did here. And now demographers are telling us that world population will probably peak around 2035 to 2050. It'll begin to decline after that. And unless people really change their attitudes about having children, and so far we can't see any good reason why people are likely to do that, other than, I would hope, the spread of the gospel and a biblical attitude toward children. Unless they drastically change their attitudes, we are going to see population decline so that by 2300, the entire world population could be as low as that of the United States now.
Yeah, we're really looking at some ominous trends, and on this program we've done a lot of talking about the demographic winter before us. And it really is frightening to think about how many people are really suggesting that human beings are, first of all, reducible to either an economic or an environmental cost, and that, secondly, the way to deal with that is by having fewer of them. It just falls on its own secular logic. But worse than that, it is a denial of the totality of the Christian worldview when it comes to understanding not only human beings and human babies, but the purposes of God in this creation. We'll be right back with more calls.
Listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. I want you to picture with me a young couple. They're married and they're very excited about establishing a family, and the wife is pregnant. And the husband comes and says, "Oh, you know, that means we're going to bring another carbon emitter into the world." You can just imagine the kind of calculation that this kind of research insinuates should take place. All right, can we afford this child? Can we welcome this child, believing that we can provide him all the material things, that we can provide this child all the material things that we want to at the standard of our expectation? There are families right now, there are couples right now, that are not having more children because they think, if we do, we'll not be able to maintain them and give them everything and provide everything at the level of materialism, at the level of education, at the level of entertainment and all the rest that we believe a child should have. There are people who step back and say, all right, now you should add carbon legacy to that, environmental impact. Should you do an environmental impact study before deciding to have a child? Should you refrain from having children or more children because you're just adding up additional carbon legacies, in this case, tons of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere that simply should be avoided? You know, a part of what I'm trying to do in setting it up that way is to show how ridiculous that actually sounds. And from a Christian or biblical perspective, how foreign and alien that is to the way that we should think about what it means to be human and the purposes for which human beings were created and the glory of God in every single human being and the fact that human beings are made in the image of God. Do you think for a moment that God looks to his human creatures, made in his own image, and said, there they are, the little carbon emitters? It just doesn't make any sense. There's something horribly wrong about that. We were made for the purpose of worshiping God. Yes, we have bodies. We have needs. We need food. We build buildings. We gather in cities. And yes, we have the technologies that burn carbon fuels and all the rest. And even as we have a very important stewardship issue for the earth, we as Christians must be especially attuned to the kind of thinking that says the way to solve these issues is to have fewer human beings, to reduce the number of human beings. Lots of people have been writing us in. We're glad to hear from you. The phone number is 877-893-8255. Love to have your calls. 877-893-TALK. We're glad to hear from you by mail. Just write us at mail@albertmohler.com. Facebook at the Albert Mohler Program. Twitter/Albert Mohler. Let us know what you're thinking. From Facebook and other digital media, we're receiving some messages. For instance, this. Matt wrote in to say, actually, having more kids lessens their carbon footprint. Families with a lot of kids in the house buy in bulk. They're buying less plastic. Think how much less their heating bill will be in the winter. Okay, let's stop there for just a moment. I see his logic. It's an economy of scale logic. And there's a lot of validity to that. The economy of scale logic goes like this. If you are a family that has one child, a couple with one child, you're going to be using up a lot of energy for three people. If that same couple had four children, they're not going to be doubling their energy. They're not going to be doubling their space needs. They're not even going to be doubling their grocery bill. And, of course, as we've already said, this fails to even take into consideration the contribution economically, socially, relationally, politically, and, of course, spiritually that these children would be making. Patrick wrote in to ask, how should Christians interact with the creation care movement, which has at some level adopted a baby capping idea for families? And it is interesting. Patrick draws attention to the fact that this document, known as an Evangelical Declaration on Care of Creation, speaks boldly about, quote, responsible procreation, end quote. Now, what is responsible procreation? The insinuation there is that that means fewer, not greater numbers of children. The insinuation there is that responsibility means being very careful if we have babies. let's talk about the population issue for a moment. Yes, we're talking about a world population now in the billions. We're talking about massive growth in the last 300 years. We're talking about reaching 1 billion and then multiplying into several billion. It might top out even in the next several years. It can't wait long, given the demographic trends, at a number far exceeding where we were just 300 years ago in terms of projected global population. But backtrack off of that for just a moment. Are we running out of space? Are we running out of all resources? The answer to that is, of course, no. Our population issue, as honest demographers will really reflect, is that we do have concentrations of people in some places that have overtaxed the local environmental resources and that present genuine issues of entrenched poverty and other socioeconomic issues. It's not like we're running out of planet Earth, and it's not like the planet Earth is an impoverished planet. We, by our social decisions, have migrated together in some places that probably will need to change. Back with more. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Let me ask you a straightforward question. What kind of considerations should you put on the table when thinking about children? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. And before even getting into all the issues about contraception and birth control and all the rest, the reality is that there are lots of Christian couples out there that are asking basic questions about children. And there is what I would consider kind of a guilt culture developing in the larger secular arena that suggests that if you have more than one child, certainly if you have more than two children, you're burdening the rest of us with your brood. And, I said not too long ago on this program, I said, here's a spiritual test for you. When you get to church on Sunday morning and you see the van drive up and you see the family open the doors and you see mom and dad get out and out comes child one, two, three, four, five, six, whatever, do you smile about that or do you cringe? I think that's a spiritual test right there. Because the people of God should look at something like that and say, that is to the glory of God. Raising those children in the nurture of the Lord is just an arena of God's glory that I'm glad I get to see. And this guilt culture that's coming from the larger arena around us is something that greatly concerns me. And I hear some of those irrational things. I heard a couple not too long ago say, and part of it spilled over in this program a few weeks ago when they said, I think the world is just too dangerous a place in which to bring a child. Let's be rational for just a moment. How many dangers do we now face? Well, the world's a dangerous place. We have war. We have the risk of terrorism. We have germs and mosquitoes. This is a dangerous world, made dangerous because of sin. But guess what? It is sheer idiocy to suggest that any time previous to when we are living now was less dangerous. Then was it? A more opportune moment to bring in children before there were antibiotics and 50% of children died before the age of 14? Was it a more propitious moment, a more blessed moment to bring children into the world during a time of plague or war or the Great Depression? I mean, it's one thing when parents are subsisting in a house with a mud floor and without plumbing and without a scrap of food on the table to ask that question. It's insane to ask it with the plenty and the comfort that surrounds most of us. I just don't understand this. I'll be honest. I think this kind of thinking has begun to infect the church. I see signs of it. I hear conversations that betray this. It's as if we are tempted to accept the suggestion that children are a net cost rather than a net benefit. Let me give you just a little history about that. In virtually every civilizational moment prior to the Industrial Revolution, children were seen as an absolute economic necessity. I mean, it wasn't just their economic blessing. They're an economic necessity. Somebody's got to grow up and work this farm. Someone's going to have to grow up and be the son that takes over the blacksmith operation. Someone's going to have to become the new energy, the new bodies to do this work, the new cooks in the kitchen. There was the absolute economic necessity, and every child was seen potentially as an economic benefit, but first of all, as an economic necessity. Boys especially, that's why in a world especially of agrarian work, boys were understood to be able to grow up and join dad working on the farm. That was very much there. And the girls grew up in order, they started making an economic contribution very early. They started working in the fields very early. They're working in the house very early. The Industrial Revolution separated work from home. And the moment you separate work from home, you begin to create a period in which people aren't working because they're children and young adolescents. When you take work out of the home, then the home becomes the place where people grow up until they're ready to go outside the home to work. And at that point, for the first time in human history, people began to ask the question, are children an economic cost rather than an economic benefit? Because they're not working yet. They're not bringing home a paycheck. The paycheck is an artifact of the Industrial Revolution in the modern age. They're not going to work and making a contribution so long as they are infants, toddlers, young children, early adolescents. They're not making an economic contribution. They don't show up on the employment list. They're not, banking and transacting business. So there are, at least for some period of their lives, economically more of a burden than an asset. For the first time in human history, after the Industrial Revolution, that began to be the thinking. But that's simply an unbiblical way of thinking. And let's be very thankful that that kind of thinking didn't infect the population so they stopped having babies. Otherwise, to state the obvious, we would not be having this conversation. The reality is that babies have been considered a gift and that children have been considered a blessing. And then you have to fast forward and say, well, what's changed now? Two things have changed now. Number one, the advent of contraception. You see, before the development of effective birth control, and in particular the pill that debuted in terms of mass distribution in the early 1960s, human beings may have been able to think in certain ways, but they couldn't act according to them because the simple formula is this: if you had sex, you had babies. But the separation of sex from reproduction led to a second development when all of a sudden children were now seen not only as being weighed against whether they were a cost benefit or a cost loss. Now, all of a sudden, you had the calculation as to whether or not you wanted to have them because they're elective. They're a choice. So you go from a cost benefit analysis for children to now the choice of having children or not. And so you enter a new phase of human life in which people are saying, you know, a child is now a decision. And it's a decision that I ought to weigh. I think before I buy a car, I think before I build a house, I think before I even, you know, transact in any major financial business, I should think carefully. And then you add to that the expectation. Here's the third thing. The third new element in all of this is that we have a context in which humanity itself is being redefined in terms of an imposition on the earth. When you look at a lot of the ecological doctrine being taught today, you look at a lot of the environmentalism being promoted in the public square today, it's all about reducing the human footprint, they will call it, human impact in the environment. And let's be honest, human beings can do awful things to the environment, things for which human beings will rightly be judged by God himself. But the net impact of human beings in this world is not negative, but positive. And if you don't really think that way, then you're suggesting that God's creation of human beings is an insult to his own creation. Let me remind you that God made human beings as the only being made in his image, and he created human beings as the only being able consciously to know him and to worship him. Think of what an insult it is to say, then, that human beings are an assault upon the rest of creation. We'll be right back on the Albert Mueller Program.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Here is a headline that caught my attention. Banning sleepovers. It's in the parenting section of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I flew here from Atlanta last night. It's actually an Associated Press story by Kelly Kennedy. Get this. Some kids are not allowed at slumber parties because their parents worry about rules and unknown dangers at other homes. All right. We're watching childhood being redefined before our eyes here. The sleepover is a childhood institution. And yet now there are many parents, indeed this is a huge movement, it's becoming more and more clear, who simply don't allow their children to sleep over. And here's the sad thing, it's for good reason. An awful lot of kids are going to sleepovers, and it's not so much that criminal stuff's going on or all the rest, it's that, you know, this child's parents may allow them to watch R-rated movies. This child may allow their children to play with all kinds of video games and different things that you wouldn't consider appropriate. Here's what's becoming more and more clear. The article's just an interesting catalyst for some thinking here. The reality is that there is no more intensely moral act than raising children. Because the act of raising children requires parents to define morality. Not only in terms of teaching what you teach your children, but the environment, the rules, the boundaries, the context in which you raise your children. That's what was so fascinating about when the baby boomers became parents, because they all of a sudden discovered we're more conservative than we thought we were, by and large, because all of a sudden now we are responsible for these children. The reality is that the divergence of moralities in this culture, of expectations of what is right and wrong, the divergence of worldviews is becoming clear enough that even within some circles of parents, they really don't want their kids sleeping over. I find this sad. It's like many other aspects of childhood that have simply kind of passed from the scene. But I'll tell you, I understand what's going on here. You simply sometimes don't know enough to know about letting your child go on a sleepover. Here's what I suggest, however, looking at this, and I've thought about this just from reading the Associated Press account and all the rest. I think there ought to be out there some parents who, especially in the context of local church, can get to know each other well enough to believe that one could trust each other enough for a sleepover with a shared moral vision and a shared theological conviction and a shared spiritual identity. It's sad to see this entirely go from the scene. But it's a sad commentary on the fact that we really do know that living around us are persons with very different moral expectations, even when it comes to their kids. But the sleepover is not the only issue, folks. What your kids learn from each other in school and in other contexts, it's not just at night. That divergence is very much a matter of their lives in the daytime as well. Back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.